The group we are looking for is probably headed toward the center of the gun, or the center of the map, which no white has ever seen before. This area is under the domination of two cannibal tribes. They are so fierce, they're feared by all of the tribes in the area, including the tough, courageous warriors of the Okomo tribe. These two superpowers, the Green Inferno, actually at war with each other. Yamamoto, three people. Shamataro, one. Each considers the other fair game.
Black Elm prophesied that after his own people were destroyed, another apocalypse would eventually affect the entire world.
Hey,
shut
like that rapid
up.
Gunfire and whirling smoke, like women and children wailing and screaming all over the world.
From the authors of the Bible to Native Americans, oracles predict a looming doomsday in our own time, centered on the year 2012. Is it coincidence or prophecy? Will the end of the world be on December 21st, 2012? Around the world, prophecies suggest that something dire might happen on that apocalyptic date. Some of the most specific prophecies of apocalypse come from the Hopi tribe of the American Southwest.
The Hopi are probably the oldest tribe that is here in the United States. The Hopi, since the late 1940s, started preparing and teaching this prophecy. It is a new prophecy, but yet it coincides with other prophecies at this time.
The Hopi believe that the world has been created and destroyed four times, and we are about to see the destruction of the fourth world.
The basic idea of the Hopi prophecies is that we're on the verge of transitioning to the fifth world, and they say that there's a whole set of conditions and things that they expected to happen, but they say they've all been completed except for one or two little things.
The signs for Hopi doomsday, and the seas shall begin to rise. Great quakes will shake all corners of the world, and the sun itself will turn hotter.
We're seeing how things since the 90s began speeding up, and things were moving quicker and quicker. The glaciers are melting, they're melting at an incredible rate. Everyone knows that the water is going to rise. Certain places may no longer be here as we know them. I think now we're beginning to see that what indigenous people were talking about, and even perhaps the Book of Revelation, is happening.
One surprising prophecy from the Hopi: near the end of days, the world will be crisscrossed by a device they call a spider. Would this be a reference to the World Wide Web that links our world like never before? The internet may be more than a reference point on the timetable. Disturbing prophecies are beginning to emerge from the Oracle Club, the Webmon Project. This project scans the World Wide Web for hints about the future, reports back with prophecies that are as ambiguous as the oracles of the ancient world, and just as chilling.
The effects of logic pushing for the Iran cash, and was not all the cash, but only the
Where do we have the unconscious moves of the world by making massive scans of the West Coast used in hundreds of thousands of rock sites? The process involves many programs called spiders or agents.
There's New Hampshire's old man of the month.
Yes.
Even if it is, I still think it's best seen in the Matrix. Think about that. The aggregator, you can figure it out. The web bots began to pick stuff in the late 1900s. But the predictions soon became ominous. In the year 2001,
one of the web bot programmers noticed that there were more to the results than simply financial predictions. Phrases began to emerge, connected to calendar dates.
The concentric circle of Christian ridges showing the rest of the year 63,000 miles.
This prediction was made in 2001.
Despite the fact that the terrorist attacks of September 11th.
Sorry about that.
It's pure mystery. See the 700-foot-long mound shaped on its western flank?
If its real, latitude is the future forecasts of the webbot are
multiplied
by other orbs around the world. The webbots also point to a global cataclysm.
I honestly don't know what's going to happen in 2012. This technology is starting with a lot of the other predictive things out there, like my calendar.
Poverty Point
get into that
is pure matrix.
Awful lot of talk about sun, awful lot of talk about energy, gamma ray bursts.
There's another large mound about a mile to the north.
Destructive
archaeologists call it
similar to the Mayans of planetary runoffs and catastrophe.
It was intended to look like it's one word solid.
Not so at all. Does that need a big class?
Anyway, where's the base I was talking about?
Slaps the earth.
The matrix consists of much more than just pyramids, earthworks, and mathematics. Shapes are important too. The investigator must be able to mark the photographs. On the east side of the Poverty Point complex, the land drops back toward the Meekin Bayou.
Or is it a meaningless pattern of random events? Throughout history, people have believed the end was near, and they were wrong every time.
We've been tracked for centuries.
Maybe this is the one. The outcome of human face, a mile beyond the
The unfinished bird mind takes on a very cool meaning, though this weekend, live in it. This grid latitude is 30,400 degrees, 39 minutes, 25 seconds, 6 seconds. The center vector in the matrix is 1.9098, 1/30th of the radian.
Do you hear me?
Okay, now let's test the eye's vector against the vector on the human headed sphinx at Giza, 5400, and see what the two faces
are. Bill's egotism drives him on and on. Infamy upon infamy.
They talk about math. Vector to vector, face to face, the exact area of a 360-degree circle. Cat to cat, human head to human head. Both talk to the matrix in the well-ordered language of geomathematics. Now, why did they tell the Sphinx that it was of exactly 5,400? Not that I'm not sure. Rational numbers are always welcome, and they do occasionally present themselves in the matrix. As Stonehenge and Newark explained back in the first segment.
We've got to stop him!
The Sphinx has the ability to address the matrix by way of common rational numbers and the irrational constants.
Let's see you. You look much better. I know it's awful being cooped up in a place like this, but I'm sure it won't be for much longer.
Please, Peter, I must get away.
Oh, I spoke to Professor Austin. He feels you're doing well, actually. In this kind of clinic, you're bound to get
better. But I'm not getting better because nothing's the matter. They should know it by now. They all assume that everyone has a mental illness.
It
that furnishes the figure.
Why can't you love me
Anne, no, you mustn't
the
say that.
Shares the same longitude.
I haven't forgotten
the
little bit, have you? But now you comforted me.
Anne, we must forget about
even
that.
Even answers the 48.669
when I became a woman, you stopped loving me.
Another of their special matrix constants.
And I began to look to other men for what I'd found in you. But there's nobody like you, Peter.
Multiplied by the
only
54
the vector
of the Sphinx.
Get
this.
Scalding the very heart of me.
No, forget about all that, or I won't come here anymore. Now calm down. Get a grip on yourself. I didn't come here to upset you.
Look, Peter.
The temple.
You don't say I'm there. But you believe me? Is that what you want to keep me? You ran away from me, though I don't know what I did. I'm so lonely.
You notice the final.
In the meantime, I have to go on living shut up here with a bunch of real weirdos.
I'd better have a word with Austin.
But why do you want to do that? Please, Peter, if you love me, let's leave together.
You must understand.
You don't need to explain.
I...
It was all right to play love games with a child. But now we've both grown up, you can't. You're afraid of what people will say. But each day I die...
Then we have the rational numbers.
We'll talk about all that the next time I come to visit you.
We get 10,800. The grid latitude. At the center of Mississippi, 670-foot long emerald...
Tell me I'm still beautiful.
You're perfect, Dan.
Multiplied by four?
If you only knew 21,600. I miss you so much.
The grid latitude.
And you're never here.
Stonehenge.
I feel so alone.
No, Anne. You must understand that anything we did as children is over with now.
The grid latitude of Germany's.
We made a title, which zoomed out of these last close-ups. Said in Polish, obey the German occupation or this will happen in your town. We played it first run in every theater in Poland.
So these executions were staged deliberately for the cameras.
Well, you see, Josef needed a propaganda film to make himself look useful and to keep his office in business. And I needed a counterinsurgency operation for the same reason. Well, there wasn't any insurgency, but if you have a counterinsurgency, you stay in business because everyone assumes the insurgency. That keeps you looting and raping behind the lines in style while the rest of the army is dying at the front. I understand the Americans developed it to a fine point in Vietnam. The My Lai massacre was a classic.
Irrelevant, Colonel.
I doubt it, but I subside. In any case, Mimi, the whole operation was for Josef and me a happy coincidence.
Your Honor, in the interest of justice, we scoured the world of Colonel Dorff's contemporaries to find even one person who would defend him, who would speak well of him. We found one. I call Charles Kong.
Charlie?
No medical books. There's nothing interesting.
Charlie, what the hell are you doing here?
Reading anything, yet has the place marked. Let me see, Senta. Now I'm certain that Dracula has returned. We weren't able to destroy Dracula in Brooklyn Pass. And his terrible power has manifested itself. Manifested itself once again? Oh, what's the matter? I'm sorry, but I can't go on reading now. Don't read this nonsense. I'll read it. Because Dracula's immortal. He's a sadistic beast, and what's more? A devil that follows man for everything. It's possible for us to destroy his power system. The devilish perversity that exists in Dracula will reincarnate.
Well, that's the, both the good news and the bad news.
Once
sad.
Terror and death
belong to us,
and for all humanity.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Shall I go? David, I'm getting nervous. Go on, sir.
Which is pretty sad because we spent 50 years.
I'm also afraid that his cruel daughter
mining the world
will return in the same
the atmosphere and everything.
I shudder just the thought of him.
But the good news is
new appearance.
That means
how
maybe
am I
in a place
where
we could
how am I destroy
really got that message to our heads.
From her ashes will generate a new Dracula. Therefore, each generation will
grow
Dracula in a completely
less satisfied,
a thousand times more perverse than the one before. And whenever man's blood is drawn by his brother, Dracula will return to punish this horror.
What did we do when we started getting money? We built bigger houses, farther
out. Freddy can't help you. The street will sleep alone.
Just physically.
No, it's my turn tonight on that dirty old mattress.
You shouldn't feel that way. It's awfully fine.
Dramatically reduced. Americans have something like half as many employees.
Listen, sir. Yes? Dr. Marlowe has returned.
Turns out it matters more than the fact that you now have 86 inches.
He'll be here soon. We shouldn't be worried about the doctor. Nothing's happened. Don't worry.
See
you in the morning.
In the morning.
The mathematics of this is that you'd be happier with a new friend than with a new television screen. And you really don't get to choose both. You know, that's not the sort of standard American
Dracula
kids who all have some more of everything. It just doesn't seem to work.
The prince of darkest unknown.
Time
can only destroy his carnal existence. Time after time, he'll return from his ashes, and each new life will surpass in horror the one before. A slight hope lightens my heart. Prince of Darkness will not acquire the true potential of his bewitching power until he encounters a true virgin that will fall in love with a vampire in a natural way,
is that they are
giving herself to him without the need of his diabolical power.
Really sort of
the blood of this young virgin will restore Dracula's evil superiority, and his life breath will revive once more his daughter, Rodna. My sincerest desire is that this young virgin never be born.
The captain is simply dealing with banking and merchant disputes. Once the balance is paid, the case is closed. To turn the court case away from admiralty law where your rights are not protected, you must avoid agreeing to represent the artificial person. This is done by stating that you are the natural person. You don't have a first or last name because those imply corporate title. In a court case, you may state that the court takes judicial notice of your honor's oath of office. Every judge must take an oath of office to practice law, yet you must make it clear to the court and the jury that the judge is acting as judge and not banker. Remember that you are a natural human being of the earth. You are not governed by anything but your own consciousness. Laws are created within a society. The society that created the laws we see being enforced today is called the Law Society. Yet the most beautiful part of this entire deception is the fact that we are not part of the Law Society, so their laws do not apply to us.
Next to our United Sorority, they're going to be asked to get down for the initiation. It's your job to make them.
My God, he's a spitting image of Ralph.
It's his grandson. He does the maintenance around here. Careful where he'll see you.
He can see us?
He's the only one. Tom sometimes thinks he's Ralph the kid. And he loves you very much, Mary Lou.
In love with me?
That's right. When love is strong, people can see into other dimensions. He sees you too, Rosebud, so be cool. Well, girls, go to work. Good night.
It's wonderful. I can't possibly accept
it.
I want you to. It's my work. You don't want to keep me from doing my work, do you? You're absolutely perfect.
Who is it?
It's you.
Who's there? I've been expecting you. The American.
Take your hand off me, Rhonda.
I knew you'd come.
I know what to do.
You want to kill me? You want to kill Elena Marcus? Kill me. You wanted to kill me! What are you going to do now, huh? Now, huh? Now, death is coming for you! You wanted to kill Elena Marcus! Hell is behind that door! You're going to meet death now!
living dead. How long you pray, you ought to be able to say, I have no idea, man. I just pray about everything, pray about anything. Everything that comes up, I pray. I'm in fellowship with God all day. Now, I believe that we should take set apart times for prayer. I don't think it's wrong to set aside a certain amount of time and spend with God every day and be really committed to that and disciplined to it. Matter of fact, I think it's great. But I don't think that just putting in that certain amount of time in the morning and then walking away and forgetting about God the rest of the day is His best for us. Just like it's not right to go to church on Sunday and then not think about God until the next Sunday. You know, God wants us to live the Christian life. It's not some kind of an act we put on when we're around certain people in certain places. It's a lifestyle. Do you know that being a Christian is, first of all, a decision you make to receive Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? But then Christianity, I believe, is worked out and walked out in a lifestyle. You have to literally learn how to live a whole different way if you're going to be a Bible kind of Christian. And one of the things you have to learn is that when you have problems, you can't solve them. Did anybody hear me? I said, when you have problems, you can't solve them. Now, there's a lot that we can say about prayer, but one of the things I want to start with is prayer does not have to be eloquent. Prayer does not have to be long. Matter of fact, the Bible actually says that we are to be careful about just repeating the same phrases over and over and over, just to add length to our prayer. A prayer doesn't get better because it's longer. A prayer doesn't get better because it's louder. Not necessarily better because you're on your knees or have your hands folded or all these other things that we think. Now, bowing down in prayer is great, a sign of worship. Folding your hands is great. It might keep you from doing something else for them. Bowing your head is good, I think, because it making you see other things, you're focusing on other things. But I'm just trying to make a point that prayer is not all those outward manifestations of process. It's not the length and the loudness of the voice, but prayer is about sincerity of heart.
And the debris of its creation orbited still. Now the long wait was ended. On yet another world, intelligence had been born and was escaping from its planetary cradle. An ancient experiment was about to reach its climax. Those who had begun that experiment so long ago had not been men or even remotely human. But they were flesh and blood, and when they had crept across the leaps of space, they had felt awe and wonder and loneliness. As soon as they possessed the power, they set forth to the stars. In their explorations, they encountered life in many forms.
No.
They watched the workings of evolution.
Please, let me have it,
worlds.
Please.
They saw how often the first faint sparks of intelligence flickered and died in the cosmic night. And because in all the galaxy, they had found nothing more precious than mind, they encouraged it growing everywhere. They became farmers in the fields of stars. They sowed, and sometimes they reaped, and sometimes, especially, they had to reap. The great dinosaurs had long since perished, and the survey ship entered the solar system after a voyage that already lasted 1,000 years. It swept past the frozen outer planets, paused briefly above the deserts of dying Mars, down on Earth. Spread out beneath them, the explorers saw worlds swarming with life. For years they studied, collected, cataloged. When they had learned all that they could, they began to modify. They tinkered with the destiny of many species, on land and in the oceans. But which of their experiments would succeed, they could not know for at least 1,000,000 years. They were patient, but they were not yet immortal. There was so much to do in this universe of 100 billion suns and other worlds.
Always it was you.
So they set out once more to the abyss.
For show yourself and learn more each and every day by being who you are, as you are, and allowing this divine intelligence, this divine life-giving energy to flow through you naturally without pushing it forward, without condemnation and judgment. Allow it to flow through you to express itself as it is. For this life intelligence has its own
made up my mind.
It's own.
I went upstairs and stripped all my clothes off. I knew if I did not, I would get her blood on me. I always remember it when it was calling. Then I hit her claws with a she saw me all naked and began to cry and drank her downstairs. I grabbed her and she said she would tell her mama. First I stripped her naked. How she did kick, bite, and scratch. I choked her to death. Then cut her in small pieces so I could take my meat to my room, cook and eat it. How sweet and tender her little apple was roasted in the oven. It took me 9 days to eat her entire body. I did not, though I could have had I wished. She died a virgin.
After dismembering her body, most of which she left behind in the closet, Fish would carry a portion of her flesh. Steal the flesh from onions and carrots, deriving sexual pleasure from the machine. Fish's letter from hell was unsigned. The police were able to discern the letter's distinctive stationery. At the time, Fish was living in the universe. Police tracked him down and arrested him. Among the materials found in his possession, the old newspaper reports about Fritz Hahn, German vampire, who killed young men before selling their flesh. An outraged policeman asked Fish about his cannibalization of Fritz Hahn. It occurred to
him. Fish's story from Fish himself is the flesh and blood incarnation of all of these fairy tale monsters that you were so fascinated and terrified and titillated by when you're a child, you know. It's like the witch of Hansel and Gretel or something. You know, the seemingly harmless old person who offers you candy and then turns out to be a cannibal. So there's something, you know, there's something very, very fascinating when you see one of these mythic monsters.
I'm Chris DiNicola, born July 1962, rendering me 32 years of age. I was a subject in radiation as well as mind control and drug experiments performed by a man I knew as Dr. Green. My parents were divorced around 1966, and Donald Richard Ebner, my natural father, was involved with Dr. Green in the experiments. I was a subject from 1966 to 1976. Dr. Green performed radiation experiments on me in 1970, focusing on my neck, throat, and chest. 1972, focusing on my chest and my uterus in 1975. Each time I became dizzy, nauseous, and threw up. All these experiments were performed on me in conjunction with mind control techniques and drugs in Tucson, Arizona. Dr. Green was using me mostly as a mind control subject from 1966 to 1973. His objective was to gain control of my mind and train me to be a spy assassin. The first significant memory took place at Kansas City University in 1966. Don Ebner took me there by plane when my mom was out of town. I was in what looked like a laboratory and there seemed to be other children. I was strapped down, naked, spread eagle, on a table, on my back. Dr. Green had electrodes on my body, including my head. He used what looked like an overhead projector and repeatedly said he was burning different images into my brain while a red light flashed aimed at my forehead. In between each sequence, he used electric shock on my body and told me to go deeper and deeper, deeper, while repeating each image would go deeper into my brain and I would do whatever he told me to do. I felt drugged because he had given me a shot before he started the procedure. When it was over, he gave me another shot. The next thing I remember, I was with my grandparents again in Tucson, Arizona. I was 4 years old. You can see from this experiment that Dr. Green used trauma, drugs, post-hypnotic suggestion, and more trauma in an effort to gain total control of my mind. He used me in radiation experiments both for the purposes of determining the effects of radiation on various parts of my body and to terrorize me as an additional trauma in the mind control experiments. The rest of the experiments took place in Tucson, Arizona, out in the desert. I was taught how to pick locks, be secretive, use my photographic memory, and a technique to withhold information by repeating numbers to myself. Dr. Green moved on to wanting me to kill dolls that looked like real children. I stabbed a doll with a spear once, after being severely traumatized, but the next time I refused. He used many pain induction techniques, but as I got older, I resisted more and more. Admit hers alone, her voice alone. He often tied me down in a cage, which was near his office. Between 1972 and 1976, he and his assistants were sometimes careless and left the cage unlocked. Whenever physically possible, I snuck into his office and found files with reports and memos addressed to CIA and military personnel. Included in these files were project, sub-project, subject, and experiment names with some code numbers for radiation and mind control experiments, which I have submitted in your written documentation. I was caught twice. Drugs, spun me on a table, put shots in my stomach and my back. Because of my rebellion and growing lack of cooperation, they gave up on his spy on me. Consequently, the last 1974 to 1976, Dr. Green used various mind control techniques to produce spy assassin messages, self-destruct, and death. His purpose? Walking all her days. He wanted me dead. And I struggled to stay alive all of my adult life.
Stop and stare at
me. All of my adult life. I believe it is by the grace of God that I am still
only
alive.
Only Great Zora can help me.
These horrible experiments have profoundly affected my life. I developed multiple personality disorder because Dr. Green's goal was to split my mind into as many parts as possible so he could control me totally. He failed. But I've had to endure years of constant physical, mental, and emotional pain, even to this day. I've been in therapy consistently for 12 years, and it wasn't until I found my current therapist 2.5 years ago, who had knowledge of the mind control experiments, that I've finally been able to make real progress and begin to
speak a voice.
In closing, I ask that you keep in mind that the memories of both lives are but a glimpse of countless others over the 10 years between 1966 and 1976. That they weren't just radiation, but mind control and drug experiments as well. I have included more detailed information of what I remember in the written documentation. Please help us by recommending an investigation and making the information available so that therapists and other mental health professionals can help more people like myself.
Rise up, Zora. Rise.
I know I can get better.
Zora.
I am getting better. And I know others can too, with the proper help. Please help us in an effort to
Why have you called me
from
so
far? From
the darkest and most dreadful creatures on the earth at your command, Zora. Conjure them up from the Valley of Evil and order them to stop the young wanderer. In return, I offer you my body and my soul.
Speechless all her days, practically speechless.
Forever.
Forever.
Had she to say for herself, guilty
forever.
Or not guilty? Stand up, woman.
Do you want
Speak
him
up,
dead
woman.
Or alive?
Just staring into space.
Kill him.
Mouth half open.
Strike him down.
Waiting.
I shall make him suffer a thousand deaths.
Something she had to tell. Couldn't it? Something that would tell her how it was.
Thank you. My. What a f***. Always like women with big
Some is for need, but this is for please.
I see we have another comedian in the house. You still got a lot of ass, mama. I say one thing, if this place would catch on fire and they'd tell everybody to haul ass, you would have to make 10 trips.
Hey, man, you can't talk to my woman like that.
Shut up. Shut your ugly, old-time, ancient ass up. If you say one more word to me, I'll have that lady take one of her and beat the s*** out of you. And I ain't lying either. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I am what I am, and I'm going to be the very best of what I am. And for those who don't like me confidentially, I don't give a damn. I'd like to thank you for letting me be myself. Thank you.
Test bummed you out?
Yeah, it sucked.
Well, it's funny, I'm a little bit more hung up with that sort of hegemonic agent, that functionary from, like, an exam land.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, it's as if he'd sprung forth from the world of the test. It's like this guy's like an emissary from the world of the test.
Wow, that's really clever.
I mean, you see what I mean? I mean, it's as if he's like a delegate or something from this Kafkaesque world.
Oh, Jesus. I feel nostalgic for kind of a Kafka-esque universe.
Yeah. I mean, the question with the carefully numbered locker doors and all the children with their own numbered locker, and it was just this kind of nightmarish uniformity, each child with its own little cubicle. I mean, I felt like I'd been welded into one of these cubicles, and I needed the functionary to unlock me, to get me out. You know, I'm talking about that question with the list. It was frightening, frankly.
But
the functionary is just a disaster. Were you even able to assemble any of the diagrams for the questions? You know, the kind of initial, like, preface to
each. I have a distinct memory of you commenting on the fact that I was making one of those.
Yeah. Were you able to figure those out at all?
What do you mean? You're talking about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. If operations is toured on Monday,
right,
productions
right.
is toured on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, that.
I couldn't do that. My pencils were broken.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's perverse the way the test is set up. I mean, the diagram they ask you to, like, painstakingly assemble, you know, you find out in the end that each of the questions is a kind of an exception to all the rules of the diagram. You know, it's as if you have to make a diagram that is, you know, fluidly designed to account for every exception to its own rules.
See, that's a trap. You're saying that the test is kind of a trap.
Yeah, the test is a trap.
That's absurd. I mean, the test isn't a trap. The test is great. I mean, the test is just fine. It's some sort of excremental symptom of this, like, absurd ideological complex that pretty much wants to just sort of expand its test-taking technique. I mean, how can you sit there and complain about the test? That's what you're here for. You're taking the test so that you can in turn give the test. You want to become a test administrator. What the right do you have to complain about taking the test and saying how bankrupt it is? The whole reason you're here is to participate in it. I don't want to fucking do that. I don't want to give this goddamn... Whoa, hey!
Of course. No, I see exactly what you're saying. I mean, at some point, you've got to reach a point when you're in the middle of taking the test where you acknowledge the time passing, you look at these ridiculous questions, you just feel
fuck
like...
Fuck the test. I don't know why you're talking about the test. I'm talking about the fact that I don't want to give them the fucking... I don't want to teach other people to take the fucking test. I don't want to waste my time with this shit. I don't want the fucking
job.
But I mean, listen to me.
Aren't you raptly awaiting the moment when the time's up and you can just leave the building and go out and I mean, you know, the next thing you know, you're home, you can rent RoboCop, make a can of spaghetti.
That sounds worse than getting a fucking job.
Well, no, let me try to make this clear. I don't know if you quite know where I'm coming from. I mean, when the time elapses and the test is over and I leave this ridiculous building and I go out and I go on the street, I'm walking home, I'm on the Brooklyn Bridge, I'm listening to my Walkman, and you know, having a pack of Twizzlers.
Oh, you're telling me that in the middle of this kind of ontological or epistemological crisis that your safety net is Twizzlers?
Okay, I'm gonna split.
Several conventional computers. Can't find them. We're always moving things around, getting organized. My assistants and I. But this is Zero's fault. Zero. He's the world's file cabinet. Yeah, pity. Poor old 13th century. Well, come along now. You want to get started, don't you?
Yes, sir.
This way. Now. But we've lost those computers with all of the 13th century in them. Not much in the century, just Dante and a few corrupt popes. But it's so distracting and annoying. You unlimited restrictions here, of course. You have to come so many times. It all takes such effort.
Do the executives still come here?
Oh, they used to, some of them.
What about the books?
Books, oh no, they're all changed, all transcribed, all information is cached. The Zero, of course, the central brain, world, fluid mechanics, fluidics, the liquid, you see, water to touch, all knowledge. Everything we ask has become so complicated now. Each thing we ask this morning, we wanted to know something about the 13th century. It flows out into all our storage systems. He considers everything. It becomes so ambiguous. Nothing at all.
Can you tell me something about the Carpet Wars?
Wars? Oh, yes, of course, we have them all here. Punic War, Prussian War, Peloponnesian War, Crimean War, Wars of the Roses. One doesn't perhaps recall it in sequence, but corporate war. Well, Zero will, or can, I'm sure, tell you anything. A memory too. Who's supposed to tell us where things are and what they might possibly mean?
Look here, boy. A visitor. Jonathan Lee, rollerball champion.
she was piled away a lot of data on him. You remember?
Does it answer you?
Finds things. This is the conclusion, is it so? Ask anything. You found it for me. Section of lock. Well, choose it.
All right, I'd like some information about corporate decisions, how they're made and who makes them.
So, you heard the question. Answer them.
Negative.
Don't have to give him a full political briefing.
Negative.
This is Jonathan E. He has to know. Make it simple. Answer.
Corporate decisions are made by corporate executives. Corporate executives make corporate decisions.
I know we have
decisions.
The answers. We do have
knowledge converts
the waters
to power.
Of history.
Energy equals genius.
Meaning?
Power is not
knowledge.
Genius is energy. Corporate entities control
fundamental
elements of economic life, technology, capital, labor, and
chemotherapy.
Corporate
dramatically
negative.
Conrad believes. He's demon-possessed. That is, he did. The personalities he manifests are actually projections of his psyche, Jungian archetypes, variations of his own personality which were in conflict. Through extensive therapy, utilizing hypnosis, visualization, Conrad was, in a sense, reprogrammed to accept these manifestations and bring them into harmony. It was on the basis of his positive response we were able to release him.
What makes you believe that he thinks he's demon-possessed?
Well, his father was an itinerant evangelist, a tent preacher who ran out on his wife and children. Conrad picked up a good deal of religious superstition in his youth.
And if we go through that, I suppose
and he developed
billions more
a protective mechanism through demonic possession.
Need all throughout the world.
His mind was unable to accept
the
thought that he had been personally rejected by his father. And so the so-called demon became the scapegoat.
So in Conrad's mind, his father left because of the devil?
Not only take oil.
He blamed that same demon for taking the hostage in Alcatraz a few years ago. Conrad was released to his brother, Charles, who lives at 1271 Ardmore Place in San Francisco.
And that's, of course, exactly what happened last year.
So Conrad's personalities, as you call them, were psychopathically violent.
For the first time during the post-war period.
It was
probably be
the consensus of our staff that any psychopathic tendencies Conrad exhibited when he was admitted here had been resolved. It was our conclusion there was no reason why he could not be released.
For which really there is no substance.
Then you don't believe he's capable of committing a violent murder.
But not only will the oil crisis of tomorrow be too expensive to fill up your car in.
Not in my opinion.
But they will be too expensive to lubricate and operate a global economy. Globalization is just a fancy word for a very simple process. Move your factory, or even better, get right out of the factory business altogether and buy whatever your factory used to make from some place halfway around the world where the labor is a whole lot cheaper. That's why when you go into a big box store and look at any of the goods that you're going to buy, none of them are made remotely close to where you live. Increasingly, that story is the same when you even go into a supermarket to buy food. But while the whole idea of a global economy is really based on wage arbitrage, that means trading jobs for where wages are high to trading jobs to where wages are low, there is one implicit assumption. And that implicit assumption is that the cost of moving things, not just the cost of moving the final product, but the cost of moving all those intermediate inputs around the world, can be done at marginal expense. So that really, the sole determining
determinant
of economic geography,
so
where we put things, is really
take some protection along this.
And that's true in a world of $20 a barrel oil.
What?
But that is not true in a world of triple digit oil.
The only thing that bothers me.
Because in a world of triple digit oil prices, what we're going to find is
done with this man in
to buy your food, to buy your steel, to buy your furniture. From somewhere made halfway down the world,
from any disciplinary measures,
penny wise and pound foolish. Because what you will save on labor costs, you will more than
talk to me, tell me they can feel it.
You see, no matter how we move those goods around the world, whether we move them by air, whether we move them by ship, whether we move them by truck, whether we move them by rail, there's only one fuel that we use, and that fuel is oil. And there's no substitute for that. We can substitute many things for oil. We don't have to burn oil to generate electricity, although there are still many people in the world to do that. We don't need to burn oil to, for
yeah,
home heat,
yeah, yeah, right.
Although there are still homes in North America that do that as well. And we don't need oil to be a feedstock to make petrol.
Enter me.
The problem is that right now there is no substitute for oil as a transport fuel. And I'm sure in the fullness of time, if you give us 10 to 15 years, technology will develop. And we will develop substitutes for oil as a transport fuel. Unfortunately, our rendezvous with triple-digit oil prices is not in 10 to 15 years. Our rendezvous with triple-digit oil prices is in 10 or 15 months. And the adjustment is not going to be developing new technologies that lessen our dependence on oil. The adjustment is going to be find a way of running our economy.
I'm leaving.
A lot.
It's the right age.
We're going to find that just at the same time that it takes triple-digit oil prices to bring forth tomorrow's supply, because yesterday's supply, is all but burned. Just as that is occurring, the world has never been thirstier for the stuff.
That is so
while triple-digit oil prices has certainly tamed North America's demand for oil and Western Europe's demand for oil, that's not where today's demand is coming from. And more importantly, that's not where tomorrow's demand is coming from. Last year, OPEC, the very organization that you expect will furnish you with your oil supply of the future, consumed 10.5 million barrels a day. Throw in two non-OPEC producers, Mexico and Russia, they consume 14.5 million barrels a day.
What
to China.
What fever do you want?
What makes OPEC so thirsty for its fuel? Well, I'll tell you what makes OPEC so thirsty for its fuel.
Herbert says
it's 25 cents a gallon gasoline.
He's going to
and
talk
more importantly,
to
7 cents a gallon himself. Bunker fuel, which is what they burn to generate electricity in the Middle East. So while everybody's focused on how much spare capacity OPEC has, the real issue is how much of OPEC's own production is it.
Ezra Cobb.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Ezra, this is Herbert. Will you do me a favor, Ezra?
If I can, sir.
Make my wife a woman. again.
How do you mean, sir?
She needs love, Ezra. Physical love. The kind I can no longer give her. Oh, touch her, Ezra. Feel how soft she is. It's been so long. Oh, come, Ezra. Go with her. Do her that favor. Make love to her. It's been so long. She needs it, Ezra. Ezra, she needs it. She needs it, Ezra. Come into the bedroom. Yes, make love to me, darling.
The wages of sin is gonorrhea, syphilis, and death.
It's been so long, darling, so long.
You know what God done then, don't you, boy?
Yes, ma'am. Blood.
Take off your pants, darling.